What's up, everyone? Welcome back to episode 75 of the Dive Bomb Squadcast. I'm your host, Matt Judy, and today's guests, you've probably heard them if you're bored in the off season or sitting in the blind. You've probably heard them cutting it up on a microphone. We've got Jeff Stanfield and Andy Shaver from the Big Honker podcast on today. How we doing, guys?
Good.
Doing great, Matt. Thank you for having us on.
Looking yeah, no problem. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on. I'm in crunch time of having a baby right now, so I'm trying to squeeze an episode out before my life changes forever, pretty much.
Yeah, you have no idea what you're in for. It's a great ride. It goes by extremely, extremely fast, but life does get pretty hectic.
Yep, I can see that. Yeah, her due date was yesterday, and by the time this episode releases, I'll have a little baby girl out.
So, congratulations, man.
Looking forward to that, man. What you been up to in this off season so far? Just recording a ton?
Yeah, it's podcast season. We go from one season to the next. It's either hunting season or podcast season, and we really don't even stop podcast season during hunting season, but just trying to line out some interesting guests, and we have two new series that we do. We have a Did You Know series that drops weekly. We have one episode a week. And then we also have our Today series that we do. So we look at interesting things that happened on that day in history, and that releases Monday to Friday. So we went from recording three episodes when we first started the podcast to now we are all the way up to nine episodes a week. So
holy,
it's hectic.
Dude, that is insane.
I felt good that it was nine, but I wasn't willing to step out.
Okay,
there
yeah, it's nine. It's nine. Andy's got that Knox City education, that Texas Tech honor.
Texas Tech math.
There you go.
Yeah, no kidding, dude. I remember about 2022, you guys had me on your podcast. Now I got you on mine. It's kind of like a full circle moment.
Yeah, we've moved full circle.
For real, man.
Full circle here.
That's crazy.
Y'all are doing a lot of wild things at Dive Bomb, a lot of cool things, and you ready for Squad Fest, I'm assuming, then.
Well, yeah, totally getting ready for it. That's like I'm ready for it, but I'm not, because Squad Fest is like the kickoff to our, you know, season again, pretty much. Go Squad Fest into a couple trade game fair, and then after that, it's just like hunting, and it's a blur until February, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah, and then, like, it's crazy how much your life changes once you have kids. Like, I used to just count down the days. February would get here, and it'd be like, okay, when's waterfowl season? And then you get kids and you get busy with them, and then you start like enjoying your kids, which I hope all parents enjoy their kids. And I enjoy my summers now a whole lot more than I used to whenever I was in a teenager and then in my early 20s and starting out as a guide and everything else. I just kept waiting for November to get back here, even September, you know, just get this thing rolling again. And I cherish my summers with my kids more and more.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that, because right now I'm just like, man, I like bass fishing until about June, and then after that I'm just like, all right, let's get this going.
My off season, I do not like February at all.
February sucks.
Other than going on vacation, there's nothing to do. I like to chase tornadoes for April and May, but by the time June gets here, I'm ready for dove season to start.
Yeah, I would agree. February is probably my like most hated month, and right behind that is March, and then after that it gets better.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't like summers. I don't like weekends at all during the summer, because there's nothing to do. When I was younger and you had more stuff to do, but I like Monday through Friday. I'd rather go to work and mess around at the lodge than to be at home all the time. And I hate weekends, because there's no excuse to go to the lodge. So I'm ready for dove season to get here today.
Hell yeah. Me too, man. I'm just ready for it.
Were you always that way, though? Even like when you had, like when we were in the house?
When y'all were little, I enjoyed summer more.
You had stuff to do.
It's just, I just as well now, just, I'd rather just be hunting season 10 months out of the year and a couple months off. I really would.
Yeah.
Now, if you'd asked me that on January 23rd, I was damn ready for it to be over with.
I think that's similar with everybody, because about the second or third week of January, I'm like, oh my, can we just like stop hunting? Can I just stop thinking about this right now? It gets so worn out by the end. But so you guys are recording nine recordings, whatever, a week.
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
How different is that from when you guys very first got started with the Big Honker podcast?
Well, like if we would have dove in with nine episodes a week, there's no way I would have made it, because I do all the editing. So yeah. I used to be stressed out. Like whenever we go on vacation, so we're going to Disney next week, so we have to record everything a week in advance.
Yeah.
And I mean, just
18 podcasts.
I've always struggled with a little bit of time management. I tend to procrastinate. So like that is not. No, that's not even in the question anymore. So usually I try to, I try to get up about 4:30, 4:45, and I will do the today that's coming out that day. I usually edit that. I'll have my coffee, and then about 5:30, I start editing that to release at noon. And then the night before, if we had a guest, I edit that to release at 5 a.m. in the morning for morning commutes all over the countries. Yeah, basically, I start out editing about 5:30, and then I go to bed editing. So,
staring at a computer all day,
all the time. So it's
Jeff just gets talking to a microphone pretty much, Jeff, right?
To a microphone. We end it, and then he walks off, and he wonders why in the hell I'm so bitchy all the time.
I got the better end of that deal. I'll 100% agree on that. I don't even know how to push one of these buttons to make it work, but. We also, what's changed is when we first started out, it was just all waterfowl. Well, yeah. We found out pretty quick that you can't do three shows on just waterfowl every week. There's just not enough to talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we branched out. And when we branched out, our brand grew tremendously. And it's not just waterfowl people that listen to us anymore. I mean, our numbers just grow and grow and grow. And it's because we reach different and do different things like the Today and the Did You Knows. But during dove season, we can still keep up the same schedule. But once waterfowl season gets there, about Thanksgiving, from Thanksgiving to the end of January, I tell people all the time, be patient with us. We're going to try to knock out a couple of episodes every week and do it today. And did you know? But it's harder than people think because we run a full lodge here with a lot of people coming through the doors. We're not just running 6 to 8 guys a day. And so we stay busy around the lodge, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Besides doing a podcast, so it makes it a different world for us.
Yeah, luckily, though, we have so many characters here. Like, we got a lot of characters that work for the lodge, so we can usually do like a guide roundtable a week, and then if we can find a guest or if Jeff and I can kind of get our schedules to sync, because I'm guiding hunts and then he's kind of running the lodge. There's times in the season where we're just kind of, our schedules don't really align. I'll be here for 30 minutes at lunch, and then I got responsibilities at home. I got to pick up kids. I got to hopefully get a nap that day. And then, you know, we scout at 4:00 and then it's time for dinner by the time we get back to the lodge. And you don't really want to be waking up at 3:30 and then start recording a podcast at 7:30 the night before.
No, that's insane. I don't even know how you guys do that during the season, dude.
It is tough. And luckily, like Andy said, we have enough guys at work here that are interesting. So we have usually a podcast we can do once a week here at the lodge. And a lot of times we'll have guests here that are really interesting. Yeah. And so we can get someone in studio
and
do a podcast with them. And that's a good filler for us is we could do a podcast almost every day at the lodge of some guests that we have here.
Yeah. And, just like clients rolling through and everything. Yeah.
You'll have the one client that wants to do a podcast that thinks he's interesting. And he's not very interesting.
He's pretty boring.
Yeah. And then the favorite one is I'm real funny. When they tell you that, they're usually not very funny.
I'm hilarious.
And you're like, oh, wow, you're not funny at all.
I sat with you for 4 hours in a blind and I never cracked a smile.
I know when Andy calls me up or he texts, he says, hey, we're going to do a podcast with this guy. He's pretty good. He's a good story. That's a good story coming in, that's going to come on.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be a heater coming in.
Yeah.
Who's one of your favorite guests you've ever had on in your entire career?
I just got asked this the other day.
Oh, well, go ahead. You might have an answer.
I didn't even have a very good answer then either because I wasn't expecting it, and we've had so many people. My favorite people that I've had on, I enjoy Ramsey Russell because he's a very interesting guy. Jim Kern, ex-Texas Ranger baseball player, Emu Outfitting. He does pitchers and stuff. I've enjoyed, had him and Fergie Jenkins, a Hall of Fame pitcher. I've known Jim and Fergie for a long time, had them on. I really enjoyed them. Wyman Menzer, who is a local here and is a historian and the state photographer of Texas. He does all the King Ranch ads for Ford Motor Company. He's a local and he's a good friend of ours. He comes on once or twice a year. He's a very good. And then we got Clay Reed, the Coyote Man. Clay Reed's one of the funniest guys.
Yeah, I listened to that one time. That dude was a hoot, man.
And then we had the Prince of Poachers, Charles Beatty, which is our most popular podcast of all time. And he's a hell of a storyteller. He just needs to finish his new book so we can have him on again.
Yeah.
Roger Reeves, the smuggler. He's got a best-selling book on Amazon. He was the original flying big drug king that came into the country. He's the one that actually hired Barry Seals, who was that show American Made. Had him on. We've had Ted Nugent on. We've had a lot of singers on. We've had some athletes on. My favorite ones probably are just regular people that we have on because everyone's got a story to tell. I don't care if you drive a truck. I don't care if you're a forklift operator for Budweiser. If you're a construction guy, if you dig a ditch, everybody's got a story. And if you can get them to pull their story out and tell you about them. So a lot of just the regular folks I really, really like on there.
Yeah, I could see that. That's kind of what I want to start doing on here. Not necessarily during duck season, but like, you know, like June, July, maybe late May. It's just get maybe not even waterfowl related, just get interesting stories from interesting people, because there's a ton of them out there. Like, even if you're meeting random people just out at an event, you're like, wow, this dude would be awesome to have on the podcast, and like just stuff like that. It's pretty entertaining. And so, yeah, you guys just branched off completely. Well, not completely, you still do waterfowl too. So started as waterfowl and now just kind of going wherever you want with it, expanding your listener base. When did you guys decide to like expand like that? Did you just run out of, didn't like talk about ducks 3 days a week and just got bored of it, or what?
Well, it started out the first 30 episodes, it was like a how to basically. So it was,
yeah,
we talked about decoy placement and how to do things in the wind and decoy adjustments and running the lodge, starting a business. And then we got to like episode like 38 and we basically had like ran through every scenario, yeah, that you could even think about, like how to set duck decoys with goose decoys and where to put your spinner and where to put the blinds. And you get to like 40 episodes and you're like, okay, well, I think that we've pretty much talked about waterfowl hunting. And, you know, there's 40 episodes of it. There's 40 hours out of basic how to stuff. So then we started trying to figure out, let's bring in guests. And then that was specific to waterfowl. And then you get a couple years in and you do three episodes a week and you've pretty much ran through everybody in the waterfowl industry.
Yep.
And then Jeff had the idea to start a public land series. So we would just talk to normal people that hunted public land. And that was pretty popular. And then just as you start to kind of grow your audience and grow your platform, it's easier to get people that aren't necessarily a waterfowl hunter or a hunter at all. Like we had a doctor that figured out the COVID protocol. Like he was ahead of the time on how to treat COVID patients that were coming into the ER.
Ebola doctor.
Roger Reeves, the Ebola doctor, you know, a smuggler. Like a lot of these guys don't even hunt, but as you start to reach more people start messaging you like, hey, I know Roger Reeves. I can get him on your podcast. He's got a book coming out about smuggling drugs.
Get the whole network going.
Yeah, you start getting a network going and then it just kind of snowballs from there. So it gets easier. But it was around episode 40 where we were like, okay, we are going to have to adjust. So that was kind of we just ran out of hypothetical scenarios on how to kill ducks and geese.
We've had a lot of preachers on and those are very popular.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we'll ask questions that a lot of people want to ask a preacher or a priest that they're afraid to ask, or they don't want to ask, or they're not comfortable asking, and we'll talk about it. And and they're very, very, very popular. I mean, you would be really surprised, because the first time we did our preacher, I thought, I'm going to see how this goes. Man, people loved it because our preacher's very relatable. And we've had, I think, three different preachers on with us. Or four.
Yeah.
And we've had a priest and three preachers, but people can relate to that. And, you know, and it's everybody needs God in their life anyways.
Yeah.
So it's good. It's a way of putting God in front of people. And we've had a lot of feedback from people that really needed that. And we've had some people that's had a lot of ex druggies and people have had huge problems with addictions. And when we have those ons, we get tons of people that say, man, my brother's going through the same thing, or I went through the same thing, man, I needed that. And so, you know, you touch a lot of people's hearts that you don't realize when you're doing this.
Yeah. That you wouldn't even think about until, you know, after the episode airs and someone's like, wow, that was crazy relatable to me, which I think is necessary to be relatable to anybody, you know, in this industry to, you know, keep listeners or whatever. Have you ever had just a completely terrible guest that you just didn't even air? Like you recorded and didn't air it? No matter what?
We're going to send it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like we talked about earlier, like if you want to be an idiot on here, I'm not going to stop you from saying something stupid. And, you know, we do offer all of our guests the ability to tell them before, this is not live. If there is something that you want taken out, I can take it out and post edit. You just got to let me know what it is. Otherwise, this thing is going up how it's recorded. Cause like I said, 9 episodes a week, I can't sift through a hour and a half podcast and just take out stuff. And plus, that's not really genuine either. You know what I mean? I think the thing that makes pop podcasts so popular is that it is you, the listener is like a fly on the wall of a conversation. And whenever you start like manicuring things and polishing answers, you kind of take away just the normal feel of it all. So yeah. I wanted to stay pretty true to, you know, I was always a big Howard Stern listener, Joe Rogan. I kind of wanted to stay with that model more than like polishing this thing up into something. I just want it to be raw and real. And the way it's recorded is the way that it's going to air. But yeah, we have definitely had some duds in the 6 or 7 years of doing this. And on our recording thing here, it's got a timer on it. When we hit record, it's got a timer. And there's times like, you feel like you've gone for an hour and you look down and it's 7 minutes and you're like, my God. Yeah. And we try to get to that hour mark with most people. But whenever you look down and, you know, you've kind of ran through everything that you were going to talk about and they're giving you one word answers and you look down and it's 7 or 8 minutes, you're like, OK,
you're like, all right, this one's going to be tough.
Dig deep, Jeff, because we got to get creative here.
Yeah, the one word answer guy is the worst. I mean, they tell you about this great story they have. And usually we can drag stuff out of people so it don't happen very often. But the last one I remember, we had a guy that was just told us how great he was. He's got all these great stories and it was going to be just a barn burner. Man, I was looking forward to it. And 15 minutes in, I'm like, God, this guy's terrible. So he had told me a few stories. So I try to lead up to those stories and I get, you know, well, did that happen? Yep. Okay.
Yeah. And you're like, yo, you were hyping this up. Like, where's the actual story at?
Remember when the riding lawnmower caught on fire and you ran over the lady's bra and panties on the clothesline next door and you set the house on fire? Yeah.
All right. Okay.
We'll go on to something else then. I mean, it's just shit like that. And you're like, how do you
and you reached out to us. Yeah. It ain't like we found you. You know, yes. It's not like you were the one that came to us talking about this great story, these great stories that you have. And it's like, okay, here's your time to tell them. And we're pulling teeth.
And then just a fail. Yeah. Luckily, I haven't had anyone like that yet, but I might.
You do eventually. Enough and you will.
Yeah. And you're going to be like, God, that was forever. I mean, it just like getting your hairs pulled out.
Gosh, dang. Yeah. I'm not going to try to avoid that, but I can see I've had a lot of people ask me to get on and I'm just kind of like, I'm only in my fifth episode in hosting, so I'm just trying to get used to it. Actually, to be honest, to me, I have been on like 19 or 20 podcasts, so it was hard for me to transition to be a host because I was the one getting questions asked to and to answer them. And now I'm like, whoa, now it's opposite. And I have to be, you know, asking the questions and then like, I don't want to try to tell too many of my own stories when I have a guest on because I get carried away with that. So it's been a challenge so far to transition to that host role.
You'll find your balance. Yeah. I mean, and that is funny that you mentioned that because we had Charlie Somerville on before here. And like anytime we do an episode, I'm not nervous, but it's just kind of like, okay, you're just kind of getting in the zone. And then I knew we had this coming up afterwards and I was like, I'm free. Like this can go wherever. I don't have to steer the conversation. So it is a lot easier being on this side of the interview than it is the one that is spearheading everything. But no, I mean, you'll find your balance and you'll know when to insert your own stories. And that's what makes it so good. I mean, with our platform, we try to make it a conversation. And in a conversation, you're going to have back and forth. You know what I mean? It's just you ask a question, I tell a story. And then if you're in a really good conversation, maybe the guest will follow up with a question of their own. So that's always nice whenever you can get a guest that's kind of engaging in the back and forth of like asking you a question about something rather than it just being one-sided. So
yeah, and you're just hammering them the whole time.
Yeah, question after question after question. And then, you know, but inserting your own story gives the guest a chance to like kind of take some pressure off of you and start asking you questions or engaging with you. So you'll find your balance as you get into everything.
Yeah, we're getting there. It's been going good so far. I've been really enjoying it. Yeah. I got this opportunity. I just ran with it. So seeing you guys, you know, you do the big honker. And then also for the listeners, Jeff and Andy also run Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. So they're guiding hunts and doing the podcast thing at the same time. And I think it's pretty impressive that you guys find the time to do all of this stuff during the season. Because on Andy's story, I always see you like you start out and you'll post like 3 a.m. of the lodge sign. And then it kind of fizzles out after like 3 weeks and you stop seeing the lodge sign post every morning at 3 a.m.
I was pretty consistent with it this year. I was proud of myself. I didn't miss any days. I didn't miss many days. So I take a cold shower every morning. That's how I wake up. Alarm goes off at 3:15. I'm allowed to snooze at one time, and then my wife starts getting ugly with me. So I get out of bed, and then I go right to the cold shower. I pick a song that day, and I got 2 minutes in the cold shower. So I know I just kind of like scrub ahead to where the 2 minute mark is when there's 2 minutes left in that song.
Yeah.
And then when I hear that cue, I flip her over to cold. So I would take a picture of my shower. And then me driving out to the lodge, whatever day I'm on. So I was pretty consistent with it this year. But most years, yes, you are 100% correct. We get past Thanksgiving, I'm like, screw it. Nobody wants to see this sign anymore.
Heck yeah. What's Jeff's daily routine during the guiding season?
My day's different. I don't have to get up at the crack ass of dawn like Andy and all them do. I usually am at the field by first light. So if shooting time is 6:30, 6:45, 6:15, whatever time it is, I'm usually there at the field right at shooting time. A lot of mornings I'll give the guides, and like Andy and Lou, I used to give them a ride back some, and Andy usually liked to walk in, but I would give them a ride sometimes. And I'm usually at the field at first light. I like to watch us hunt. So I usually will pick a place that I think I need to be at, and I'll be there at first light to watch hunt. I'll watch them hunt for a little bit. We've got a group text going, so we always keep up. I can always tell what's going on at the other fields. Like, we usually run about four groups a day, so I've got a bearing of what's going on at all four groups at all times. And I usually scout in the mornings. Now, our area is unique compared to a lot of places. I don't drive more than about 15 miles every morning to where we're going to go at the farthest. Sometimes we hunt within a mile from my house.
Damn.
And so I'll scout and I'll sit and watch, and I have my area scouted, and I usually am pretty good at scouting a couple of days. We do the same thing over and over, and I've been doing it a long time. The scouting's not like a lot of guys that are driving an hour or two every day. Now, I usually get back. The mail drops in Knox City at 8:30 to 8:45. I try to get back to the post office by 8:45, check the mail, go to the bank, go to the lodge, make sure everything at the lodge is going the way it's supposed to be. If anybody's got any questions, I'm on the phone, emails, and then the clients will come in anywhere from, I've seen them there at 8:30 in the morning done, you know, picked up and all the way back to the lodge at 8:30 a.m. Sometimes it's 10:30, 11. We have lunch at 12 o'clock. I try to get all of my stuff done before lunch. At lunchtime, we have lunch. I settle up with everybody that's leaving as they come in. Then we start getting ready for the next day. We scout at 4 o'clock. So usually from 1 to 3, it's pretty quiet around the lodge. We got afternoon hunts. They're all usually gone by then. So I got 2 hours of usually nothing going on. And then the guides know when we leave the scout in the evening, we leave at 4 o'clock. And when I say 4 o'clock, that means if you're not here at 4 o'clock, at 4:01, my ass is gone and you can drive yourself to the field. I'm not babysitting you. You're a grown man. 4 o'clock, we scout. 4 to 6, that's my favorite time of the day. It's usually all the lead dogs. So if we got four groups, there's four guides there and me. We scout, come back. We have a guide meeting at 6 o'clock. At 6 o'clock, we have dinner also is open. Michelle and them open the doors to the dining hall. We have a guide meeting, 6:15. We're done, usually 6:10. Guides go out, go to each table, visit with the hunters, tell them what they're going to do for the day. I go to the family table in the back. We have a big table or a big bar in the back. It's got about 20 seats in it. And when we have a full crew here, kitchen ladies and everything, we have 20 to 25 people in the kitchen every night. And that's where we all sit as a family, and we sit and have our meals. And I'll settle up with people at night if they want to settle up. Guys buy merchandise, shirts, caps, stuff like that. And usually I'm back home. The guides, I'm the last one to leave every night, and I'm usually out of here by 8 to 8:15, usually home by 8:30. Some nights I'm home by 8 o'clock. We've got a pretty much we have a system we use all the time. And my life's not that different at home. I go to bed at 10 o'clock at night. I get up at 5:30 or something. Sometimes it's 11 o'clock at night if there's a football game I want to watch. January, sometimes I'm in bed at 9 o'clock. I mean, I'm tired by that time, but that's basically every day is the same for me.
Yeah.
That's my typical everyday deal, and put out fires all day here and there that we got going on.
There's some shit going down. Yeah, that's a pretty structured day-to-day life during the season. I'm sure shit goes haywire every now and then, but that's a pretty good time frame there to have everything planned out like
that. And it's the same every day, and I like keeping it that way because shit does happen. Every day something happens. But
yeah,
we've got an average of 35 to 50 people here every single day. We feed people 3 meals a day. You've got ladies that work for you that get the rooms clean. You got food delivery trucks that come in. Stuff breaks. So, you know, it's like any other business. You got stuff that goes on and happens good and bad all the time. But We have a system, but we're really blessed because Michelle and the kitchen ladies, I don't have to worry about anything in the kitchen. Tony takes care of all the maintenance on the outside. He does a great job with that. Andy's in charge of all the guides. The guides do their jobs. And so I basically oversee a lot of stuff. I don't have to make a lot of, I mean, I make some decisions. I make more decisions probably when we're going to day hunt somewhere or something than I do anything else. But I trust the guys that work for me, most of them. And it just, it's pretty, it's easy. It's more complex than it really is.
Having that structure is the important part, though. And I, if anybody is aspiring to be a guide one day or work in the waterfowl world, you got to have that structure. You know, I'm a stickler about making sure my trailer is clean and organized. But without that structure, everything's just chaos.
Yeah.
And if you're running through your ass trying to find your spinner as ducks are landing in your spread or whatever, I mean, that's not good. So, I mean, having that structure, having the organization, that's the only way that you can do it 7 days a week and get in and out in a timely manner. Because if it's just chaos and you've got shit strung from the bed of your truck to your trailer and underneath seats and everywhere else, you're not going to, number one, when clients open when they look inside and see what it is, you're going to seem unorganized. And, you know, whenever you're guiding hunts, you're dealing with professionals most of the time because they're the people that have money. And professionals, like, you're not going to go to their office and they're just going to have shit scattered all over their office. So that trailer is an extension. That is your office. That is your office space. And if you're unorganized and you've got stuff that you can't find, you're going to be seen as unprofessional, unprepared. And then that's going to get reflected, especially if you have a bad hunt. All these things start factoring into your client's mind when it comes tip time. So yeah,
then the domino effect starts.
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to make as much money. So any young guides or anybody that wants to be a guide, have a routine, have some structure in your life, because it is easy because you're running on little sleep. So it is easy to just be like, I'll just worry about that tomorrow. And then you just keep doing that over the next couple of weeks. And then by the time you get towards the end of the season, you don't know where any of your crap is. So stay organized, have a structure. It's boring. And, you know, I mean, like I said, it's what helps me is having, because there is so much unknown. So if I can have certain parts of my day that are just plug and play and I don't have to think about it, I don't have to worry about where the silhouettes are because they're right where I left them. And I made sure that my trailer was organized the day before for the next morning hunt. It just, everything runs more smooth that way. And if you start having shit everywhere, it's you're going to be affected.
Say goodbye to that.
Well, I mean, you're a professional, right? I mean, you are a professional waterfowl hunter.
Yep.
Act like it. You're the one that signed up for this job. Nobody came and told you you were going to have to do this. You sent the resume in, you sent the application in, you did the interviews, you know, you kind of knew what you were signing up for. So act like a professional.
Yeah. Just stay on top of your damn game pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, every day, it's 7 days a week, 5, 6, 7 days a week, whatever it is. Like, that's what you signed up for. So
true.
Don't be bitching about it.
That's with anything in life, honestly, any job you ever do, anything like that.
Yeah, nobody plucked you out of, nobody plucked you off the street and was like, hey, you're going to work at Walmart, right? You're the cart guy. Be the best cart guy that you can be.
Yep. So how long has Stanfield Hunting Outfitters been in business?
Getting close to 35 years.
35 years.
Yeah.
Is there any like legendary stories that have just been passed down or told to like every client group that comes in, like through the lodge?
We've had a lot of characters have worked for us over the years. I mean, I've had Ron Winneke worked here for a couple of years. He was a world champion duck caller out of Nebraska. I had Matt and Brian Sullivan work for us. I'm gonna forget somebody, so I'm gonna back off of just saying I've had a lot of different guys work for us. We've had a lot of good times and we've had some good stories. We had trying to think of stories I can tell. Stories, but the language on some of them is amazing. I had a guide work for me one time and he come in to see me and he goes, well, I couldn't hunt today. I go, what do you mean you couldn't hunt today? He goes, well, it's too foggy and I couldn't find the field. This is the honest to God true story. I go, what do you mean you couldn't find the field? Well, I just couldn't find it. It was too foggy. So we came back to the lodge. Okay. So where are the people at? Oh, they got mad and left. Well, hell, do you blame them? I mean, go out there and try to hunt. You know, if you had a built-in excuse. If we got out there and hunt, there was no hunting and no birds flew. We can't control the fog. But when you can't find the field, well, I just can't find the field, guys. So you're going to go. They left.
Sorry. Guess so we're not.
Come in. He goes, hey, can you come out here and look at this trailer? I go, okay, what's wrong? He said, look at that four-wheeler. four-wheeler all scraped up on the front. What happened? Oh, I forgot to tie the four-wheeler on. It fell off trailer going down the road. I mean, it just stuff like that over the years, the little things. I mean, I've had clients. I have a Matt Sullivan. This is his story. I'm going to go ahead and say this is one of my favorite stories. Anyways, Matt worked for us for a long time, or for a couple of years. And Matt was a young kid, 19 or 20 years old. And if Matt worked for me today as a 19-year-old kid, I'd have strangled him probably the first 3 days. But Matt was very talented, and I could have probably harnessed him. Probably would have been good for Matt and me both if I'd have been older. And Matt would have had somebody like me to get onto him, because Matt was very talented. So I'm sitting in the office one day, and Matt's on a hunt, and Matt comes, and this guy comes in my office, and he closes my door. And that's never a good sign when someone closes your door.
Yeah.
Turn around and close the door. I thought, oh shit, I'm fixing to get a butt chewing on this deal. He goes, I need to talk to you about Matt. I said, okay, have a seat. He sits down. About that time, the door opens and Matt comes in the door, and Matt said, sir, can I talk to you? And that guy says, I'm talking to Jeff. So Matt closed my door. When I get done with him, I'll talk to you. So closes the door. And that guy says, I'd like to talk to you about Matt. About that time, the door opens again. Matt said, sir, can I tell you my side of the story? And I said, Matt, close the door. He's fixing to talk to me. Close the door again. About that time the guy starts, Matt comes in again. Matt said, sir, I'd just like to tell you my side. And that guy said, won't you just come in and tell Jeff your side? I said, yeah, I'd like to hear what's going on. The guy starts to talk to me, and Matt said, sir, I never called you an MF. I said, you reminded me of one.
Mother, father.
Yeah.
Called him a mother, father, and then his defense was, well, I didn't call you that.
He's like, I didn't actually say it.
Yeah. I just said that you simply remind me of one.
Still the same shit.
I didn't know what to say. I was like, huh?
That was his defense.
But Matt was a young kid, and he was very talented. But another time he was in the parking lot, and the guys got pissed off at him. He had a great hunt, but he was terrible with older guys. Anybody over about 45 that was a grown adult, he did not do well with. Now, if I put him with a group of 20 to 25 year olds, it was gold. But well, older guys did not enjoy his personality at all. So Matt comes in, the guy shot a limit of birds, and they're leaving. And Matt's like, did they tip me? I go, no, did they tip you? Matt ran out of the parking lot. Sir, did y'all leave my tip with Jeff? They just kept driving, drove right on down the road.
Like, hell no.
Yeah. Another time, Matt, we had a piece of property that was about 15 miles away. It's a peanut field by itself. And Matt goes, I'm going to go down there and look at it. I said, okay. He goes, I'll let you know if there's any birds on it. I said, okay. So he comes in from scouting, and he scouted by himself. I hadn't been down there a couple of weeks. And he come in, he goes, well, he said, there's about 1,000 birds feeding on a field two fields over. He goes, these guys have shot limits 2 days in a row. So I'll take these guys down there out of the way so I don't burn a good field with them. I said, okay, team player, I appreciate that. That works out good.
Yeah.
Well, that morning I go scout and I come back to the lodge. Well, here they come driving up 7:45, 8 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, what the hell's going on here? I go, how'd y'all do? Oh man, it was excellent, man. I cannot believe you let us hunt that field. I go, what? He goes, oh man. He said, Matt, there's been birds in that thing, Matt said, for 2 days in a row. And he goes, we can't believe we got to have first pick of fields and get to hunt that field. I'm like, I'm glad you guys are good guys, blah, 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 they settled up. I chewed his little freaking ass out for not telling us about that. We work as a team around here, and that was not a team play at all. It was a season lease place. We had it season leased. Hadn't went and looked at it in a while. It was out of the way, and there was a little roost lake southwest of there, and the birds were going into it. It had about 5,000 birds in it, and he was done in about 30 minutes.
Damn.
And I was not very impressed with that.
Yeah, not too happy.
So those are kind of stories
that we talk about
at the guide meeting. At the first year, when we have new guides, and every year we have one or two new guides, we sit down and I go about the do's and don'ts. So those are things you don't do.
That's true. Pinnacle of do not do that.
Yeah, we got an extensive list of don't do's.
Yeah. You ever had any like crazy weird clients come through? You're like, damn, that dude was a weirdo.
Yes.
The Muslims.
Hard to sit in the blind with.
We had that. We had, whenever I was a young kid, we had a husband and wife that came hunting. I don't know if they're still alive or not, but it would come time to, for like pee breaks, and she would not leave. She would not, she would just whip it. She'd just squat right there. So like,
we nicknamed them Papa Squat.
Yeah, Papa Squat. Like we would be, this was back in the days that we would like dig a hole. So we would be sitting in our hole.
Oh my gosh.
And then she would kind of wait for everybody to get like kind of settled back where they were going to be. But she would just go like five yards outside the spread and then just like kneel down and just drop them. And so like you'd look over your shoulder and there's just a 6-year-old vag just like looking at you. And you know, you're just like, oh boy. Like, you know, I was a teenager at the time, but I didn't need to see that.
Yeah, what do you do? What did you do in that situation?
I just like turned back around real quick and act like I didn't see this woman's hairy bush. Like that's all you can do. Like I'm 16 years old. I was pretty hard up seeing something like that at that age. But that was one that I was just like, I don't need to see that.
I mean, it was an ongoing deal for like 10 years.
Yeah, they came every year. And her husband was
it wasn't just a one-time deal.
No, like they would come to the lodge and Jeff would be like, all right, you got Papa Squat this year. And it's not them again.
You're like, man.
And then he got to where she quit coming.
I hope he don't listen to this because he's going to know what he's talking about.
I bet they're dead.
No, they're not. He called me about 6 months ago.
Well, either way. So she quit hunting, but he would need a ride to the field. And like that, the commute to the field in the morning, that's like my time. That's when I kind of thin out a little bit. I think about what we got to do. I listen to what I want to listen to. I'm not worried about, because you're an entertainer. That's another fun little fact about you're not just a waterfowl hunter. You're also like an entertainer. So you got to be engaging and talk and all this other stuff. So that 20 to 30 minute drive, that's kind of my time. I get to listen to the radio. I don't have to worry about talking to anybody. And then he'd be like, hey, can I ride with you? And it's just like, oh no, you're infringing on a sacred time.
You're like, hey, this is my time.
I'm going to talk to you in the field. I don't want to have to talk to you on the ride. And then the ride back's always the worst, because then you got to talk about the hunt and everything else. And so, yeah, they came a lot. Yeah. And then there's times I just don't want to talk on the ride back. I just want to, it was a bad hunt. I just want to get back to the lodge, eat my sandwich and move on with life. And now I got to replay what went wrong with this guy.
You got to tell the story about the trailer.
They weren't weird. They were just trying to help in an odd manner. So we had a spring bust on a trailer, and I was with my uncle. I was with Jeff's brother, Tony, and he's very industrious. If a problem happens, like he can usually like MacGyver a situation, MacGyver a solution. So the spring breaks and the wheel well is resting on top of the tire. So anytime you move, like you're going to have a flat if you get on the highway. So Tony was like, I think if we can get everybody on the side of this trailer, we can lift it up enough. I can shove a shovel and create enough of a gap to where we can limp this thing back to the lodge. So I was like, okay, cool. So I tell everybody the plan. It's one of those open trailers. So it's not an enclosed trailer. It's open. And it's got like railing on the side, kind of like the table that we have. So everybody, I was like, all right, everybody spread out along this trailer. We're going to 1, 2, 3. We're all going to lift up. Tony's going to shove it in there. We're out of here. So on that hunt, we had two brothers that were like Biden age, like didn't get around very well.
Biden age.
Walked with, they had like the Velcro white shoes, you know, old man white pediatric shoes or whatever with the Velcro straps. Very easy to pick out of in a lineup. So we all get on. Tony's underneath the trailer and I take my position. And I'm pretty close to Tony to where I can like look under and he can communicate with me and I can communicate with everybody else. So we all, 1, 2, 3, we lift. So as we're lifting, I'm looking down at my feet and I'm seeing Tony underneath there. Well, on the left side of my boot, I see one old man's shoe, and then on the right side of my right shoe, I see the other old man's shoe. And then, like, I've got the trailer, and I just feel these cold, clammy old man hands go around mine, and I'm in a squat position. I'm very vulnerable at this time. Very vulnerable position. I've got my ass back. It's perfect form, but it is a position to get taken advantage of. So I'm about ready to lift, and I just feel this old man just, like, gyrate his pelvis into my ass and into my back. And he held on a good couple seconds after Tony says, we're okay. I got the shovel in. And I tell everybody, okay, we can let go now. And I try to pull my hands back and I'm locked in there. The old man has me locked in and I don't know what's going on behind me, but I turn around. I'm like, he said, you can let go. And then he lets go. Yeah, I was very vulnerable. I was young at the time. I didn't realize that I had to protect.
You remember what it feels like?
Yeah, it was like Shawshank.
God, I laughed so hard. We've told that story all the time.
It was not a good situation.
And then,
oh my gosh.
How about backing the trailer up into the young man?
We didn't back it up into him. We hit him in forward.
Oh, we did?
Forward. Yeah, I didn't hit him in reverse. I hit him in drive.
Andy ran over a client, broke a kid's leg one time. He was a basketball star.
Nothing was broken.
And I thought it was broke.
No, it was
career ruiner.
He walks with a limp now, but he's recovered.
He was the basketball. He was their leading point guard. Led him to state the year before, and Andy ran over him in a goose field.
My gosh,
that was partly me,
partly you. You was driving.
It was a windy day. It was a windy, windy day in Oklahoma. We were hunting in Oklahoma at the time. Wind was blowing like 50 miles an hour, 60 miles an hour. It was an event. Well, we were in the A-frames, and as we were tearing the A-frames down, like the wind would just like take it and whip it. So we devised a plan as a guide staff. I had several guys with me that day. It was not just me. We'll pull the trailer. It's a big double axle trailer, enclosed trailer. We'll pull it up, create a little bit of a wind block, and then we can tear down the blinds without getting anybody hurt.
Yep.
So we get to the last blind, and I need to pull forward a little bit. Well, unbeknownst to me, there is a teenager sitting on the wheel well. If he'd have been working, he wouldn't have gotten hurt. He's sitting on the wheel well outside of the wind, and I go to pull forward. Well, when I do, I like buck him off, and he falls in front of the wheel that is now moving, and I hit him with one tire for sure. I don't know about the second one.
Maybe the second one,
but I heard everybody hollering, whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, in my mind, I was hearing go, go, go. So classic. I pulled forward, and then I guess that's when he got like in between the two tires. So then some people are telling me to back up. Some people are telling me to go forward. So I just kept going forward, and then that's when the other one hit him.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys just got a billion just store over the years. Just
the moral of that story is like, just go to work. Like, be out there with everybody else. And if you're going to sit on the wheel well, out or something. Yeah, you know, I mean, there's plenty of stuff to do. And like, if you're that great of a basketball player, like once you felt the trailer moving, you should have been able to hop off.
Now he's blaming it on his agility.
I'm just saying, if you're that good of a point guard, you should have the athletic ability to hop forward and not get run over. His dad was two tires.
I got the call. I get to the ER and I'm like, howdy. Yeah. And the dad was really cool about the whole thing.
He was.
So it worked out really good.
He knew his son was lazy.
There was another story about a group week or two before that. We're doing a field duck hunt in a Milo field. And we are slapping the ducks. I mean, we got a big group of guys and we've shot a bunch of ducks. We don't need but about 15 ducks to be finished. And I'm sitting there. So right as soon as shooting time, we got done right before shooting time. So we're done 5-10 minutes before. And I pull up there. Well, the whole time I'm watching this, there's this guy gets his freaking dog out. I'm not a dog fan on a hunt. And this guy gets out and has to walk his dog halfway to the birds and then lets him just get back. I keep watching this. I'm like, get in the dang blind. Let the guys do their job. So when we hunt's over, I go up there and I'm going to give rides back to all the drivers to go back to get their cars and they can drive to the field. We can pick up. He's the first one. He gets in. He goes, I thought we'd got done about 30, 45 minutes earlier. Well, yeah, we would have if your dang dog would have stayed, you know, but what the hell? You know, I don't understand. Dogs are is man's best friend, but they're not a guide's best friend. A lot of times someone else's dog damn sure is not a guide's best friend.
So you're not a fan of dogs at all in the field or just dogs?
If they can do the work,
I don't mind them at all. But you can have a guy come on a hunt with you and his dog can be terrible. And you can say, listen, dude, your wife is ugly as hell and he won't get mad. But if you tell him his dog isn't good, he gets mad. And we see a lot of dogs that aren't good dogs. The ones we have that are excellent, I love them. Heather, they save a lot of work, the steps. But, man, a lot of guys' dogs are terrible. But then a guy will walk his dog to the bird and then have his dog fetch it and pick it up and hands it to him. And he's like, oh, you picked up all 35 birds today. Yeah, you walked 35 times out there. That's not
freaking.
And you know how duck hunting can be. Like, a lot of times, especially, like, if you're an afternoon duck hunt, you're up against the clock because you got the sun's going to go down. You got to quit shooting. So when the ducks are flying, like you need to be shooting then, not have a guy in his yellow lab in your hole picking up the widgeon. So it's like, you know,
you got to capitalize on that.
Right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And then to be like, oh, man, I really thought we'd be done earlier. Well, yeah, we would have been. We would have been if you could have sent it from the blind. So,
yeah, if your dog was actually worth a shit and could actually pick up a duck and not be burning three flocks while you shoot one.
Where that wears me out. I'm like, just let's shoot. And when we pick up, you know, you get close to a limit, let's pick everything up and let's see where we're at. You know, you can tell kind of how many birds you got, but let's don't walk ourselves out there with the dog. If the dog can't go 50 to 100 yards and pick up a bird by himself, shoot him. Get rid of him. You don't need that dog no more. Get your dog that works.
Yeah,
pet. I've got two dogs at my house that can't retrieve 10 yards. They're not hunting dogs. They're pets. There's nothing wrong with that. But some dogs just are not hunting dogs. Just because you buy something that's got a retriever after it doesn't mean it's a retriever.
That's true. I mean, kind of the same thing. Well, in the same realm. So with my boarding kennel, I'll have people that come in and be like, oh, my dog's such a sweetheart. She's so nice. He's so nice. And the moment that owner leaves, they're just absolute shithead for the next 5 days.
Yeah.
And I have to deal with it. And then they come back like, how is my dog? And I'm like, oh, it really wasn't that good. And they're like, no, no, he's the best dog ever. I was like, yeah, well, he tried to bite me 4 times in the yard. No, he'd never do that. I'm like, oh my gosh.
He did. He tried it.
Yeah. And that's the way it is with hunting dogs. Or I had a lady call me the other day and she was wanting to talk about getting her husband a hunt for his Christmas present. She's like, I know it's early. I said, no, it's really not. I have a lot of people call this. I'd like to buy a deal. It's for him and his father. I said, okay. She goes, they want to bring their dog. I said, I can't do that. Well, what do you mean? I said, unless you have a private party, you cannot bring a dog. Well, I don't understand. Well, because the dog might not be any good. You know, I told her, I said, ma'am, we do not. I said, dogs mess up punts all the time. Oh, this dog's perfect. He retrieves in the backyard. Not saying he's not, but he's not coming on a hunt unless you got a private group. Because you just can't convince him of that. To them, that dog's the greatest thing in the world.
Yep, 100%. I feel that to the core running a dog boarding kennel. Everybody thinks their dog is the best dog on earth. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I got one good dog that's a good pet, and I got another one that's a shithead, and I know that.
Yep. Yeah, traveling with Dive Bomb all these years, I've ran into some interesting people on the road too, but it's like you got to sit there and hunt, and like you're trying to film, and then after you get in the truck, you're like, holy shit. That was weird.
What did we just witness?
You're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But everyone's out there for the same thing pretty much. So I can't give anybody too much grief.
There's a lot of weird people in the world. And I don't knock anybody that wants to go out with their dog and hunt their dog by themselves. But don't put your friends through that situation. It's just, especially if you're paying money to go on a hunt.
Yeah, that's true. That's on a whole different level. It's not just like hunting with your buddies or running around on the weekends. Like if you're paying for the whole experience and the whole trip, just like even like, I'll travel a lot of places too, and just see people just getting hammered the night before. And I'm like, do you really just, you want to feel like shit in the morning while you're hunting? Like, I don't know. I guess, you know, anyone can do their own thing. But when I see that too, I'm like, I feel like that would just ruin the entire experience pretty much.
Yeah, I don't. The getting drunk like that. Dove hunters, we'll have more guys will drink dove hunting, like especially on Saturday, because they won't get up Sunday to hunt. They'll just go home. They'll walk home, sleep in, go watch football. They've hunted all weekend. They've had a great time. But, man, waterfowl guys, they get here, and I've never understood that. I had a guy a couple years ago wanted me to go over by the fire pit and hang out with him and drink beer all night. I said, I'm not doing that. Well, they could do you some good. No, it wouldn't.
Like, I don't think so.
30-plus years, I don't need to go over by that fire and sit and drink beer all the time. I may go over and have a glass of tea with you, and I'm not an anti-drinker. I just don't. I'm working every day, 7 days a week.
Yeah,
and that's the thing with my guides. My guides ain't, we're not getting drunk the night before. We got to work every day. And it may be your 33rd day in a row to work, but it's that customer's first day to be here. And he doesn't want someone smelling like freaking an old alcoholic taking them on a hunt.
Yeah, it's something I've never really understood. Like I'll be some places too, and I just see, I mean, if it's like a bachelor party too, whatever. I mean, people can do what they want, but I'm like, man, do you really want to just be feeling like you want to puke while you're just sitting in the blind in the morning and just not enjoying your experience, you know, that you're paying for to be there?
We had one guy we were laying out and he was trashed. I wasn't there for this hunt. This is my grandfather's story, who's not here anymore. But anyway, setting out decoys and everything, and they go by with like a headlamp and they see this guy. And he's laid down and he looks like he's dead. He's got his arms crossed, but he's got the barrel of his shotgun and it's right here underneath his chin. So everybody's like looking to make sure, number one, it's not loaded, because if you go to take this gun away from him, what's he going to do? Right. You're waking up a drunk that is trying to sober up and you're trying to take a gun away from him. So make sure the gun's unloaded first. And then they just kind of like gently like made sure it was safe. And kind of peeled it away from him, and he got to spend the morning in the truck.
That is insane.
Yeah, it was. It pointed right there at the base of his chin.
Yeah, that's just like scary.
Yeah,
bad.
I don't understand why you would have to go hunting and think you need to be drunk to go hunting in the first place.
It just sneaks up on them, I think.
I don't think it sneaks
up. I think they get up. I think
beer.
They get out here. They get with their buddies, and then their beer's going down so good, and it's just they get in a position to where, and then no guy wants to be the guy that's going to sleep in, right? So it's like you're with your buddies. You did pay this money. You don't want to take the ridicule from them. So it's like I'm going. By God, I'm going.
I'm waking up regardless. I'm going. I mean, I do the same thing on bachelor parties with like, I mean, it's different than bachelor, but when I see my college buddies I haven't seen, you know, in a long time, the first thing we're doing is just cracking a shitload of beers the night we all get together and just having a good time and catching up. But I think there's a time and place for it.
I had a guy one time show up at 8:30 in the morning Check-in's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. 8:30 in the morning, I hear this Panama by Van Halen come cranking in the lodge parking lot. And I'm in my office.
Good song.
I'm like, who the hell? Yeah, it's a great song. I'm a big Van Halen fan. I'm like, who in the hell? I kept thinking one of my guides is back soon. And I'd been going keeping up with everybody. And a couple of them groups were about done, but they were 15, 20 minutes away and they were just picking up decoys. So I thought, what the hell? And I look out there and it's this old, like 1984 Blazer, K5 Blazer, one of the big ones jacked up. And the guy pulls in the parking lot and he backs into like room one or two on down out there a little bit. And I'm like, what the hell? There's nobody even in that room right now. And I look out there and I'm like, hey, I said, can I help you? I said, did you hunt this morning? Hey, dude. Hey, Jeff, it's good seeing you. I'm with the group coming in tonight. And he tells me, I'm not going to say the group's name, embarrass the guy. And he said, I was bored this morning at 5 a.m. And I said, screw it. I'm going to go ahead and out to Stanfield's, go to the Big Honker Lodge. He said, so I'm here now. I took off today anyway. So I'm just going to sit right here and listen to some music and drink a little beer. I said, okay. That guy played every song Van Halen has recorded 4 times during the day. My groups would come in. Hey, dude, what's going on? How'd y'all do? And look at their birds. All right. So at lunchtime, Michelle goes, do you want to see if that guy wants to eat lunch today? So I went over to him. No, man, I'm good. I'm just going to sit right here and drink my lunch a little bit. Okay. He came in at dinner at 6 o'clock that night and he couldn't even walk or talk. He sat there and listened and had a Van Halen concert and talked to every person that was at the lodge and drank beer all day long. And then by the time he was here for dinner, he couldn't even walk. He didn't get up the next morning.
Van Halen and beer is a good combo
all day.
Anywhere else.
You should have gone into work that day, bud.
Yeah. I did.
You got more bang for your buck.
And I looked up and I was like, who in the hell is here? And it sure enough, it was him. I was like, God almighty.
Damn. Totally off topic. Jeff, so you live in a really small town, right? Knox City is a pretty small town.
1,000 people.
Yep. I'm from 1,200 person town. Did I hear that you were the judge or are the judge or something like that?
Mayor judge.
I was mayor for 4 terms and I was a judge for 15 years.
Damn.
And I'm nothing now and I'm happy.
I don't even think, was it hard to balance the time for that or is it so small? It's like few and far between. Because my dad was the mayor of our little town for 2 years and they had one meeting a month every like second Monday and it was like 30 minutes long.
I'm a fast meeting guy. If there's nothing to talk about that's important, we're not going to really go into it. Like our accountant would come in to give us our reports. And the first time I was mayor, I had to listen to him for about 1 hour and 15 minutes, tell us nothing, basically. So the next year I asked him, I go, is everything on the reports look good? I mean, I don't deal with the money anyways. We got a city manager, so it's not like I'm writing checks for the city. I could, but I didn't. And I had a city credit card I could use, but I didn't ever. And he goes, oh, yeah, everything's perfect. I said, okay, you've got 7 minutes. He goes, what? I said, you have 7 minutes. I said, if there is nothing wrong, you give us a quick deal for 7 minutes, because I'm going to be honest with you, nobody in here wants to sit and listen for 15 to 30 minutes of just numbers.
Or understands what you're saying.
Yeah, so let's see. Yeah, exactly. You've got 7 minutes. So we had 7-minute deals. And I was that way on a lot of things. If there was something we needed to discuss, there was no time limit on, but it was stupid to discuss shit that was just a waste of time. So I was really quick about that. And that was just one time. But I mean, we had some different issues, but anything that was a big project or something, it seemed like it didn't happen during November, December, and January during my busiest times. So I don't remember missing many things. And I got to set if you're the mayor, you get to set the time and the agenda.
Yeah,
so we would do the agenda. And I would do I got where I was starting to have my council meetings my last couple of years as mayor. I would do them at like 1 o'clock in the day. So I would have dinner, get everybody lunch, settle after everybody. Then I could go to my council meeting and I'd be done within by 3 o'clock or 4 when it was time to scout. So I kind of manipulated it to where it's benefit me, but I was the mayor and I had that right.
Yeah, you're the mayor. You can do whatever you want.
I was mayor for 4 terms. I was a judge for 15 years. I'm retired from all of that. I do not miss any of it at all, but I did my time and I think more people should do it and be involved in their communities.
Yeah. So you don't miss it at all. Like you did your thing, done that and just freaking living now.
No, I do not want to do any of that anymore. Our county judge spot's coming up. I'm going to run for it. And that's going to be next May at this time. Next year at this time, I will either be the county judge or I will be officially retired, never running for nothing ever again. One of the two didn't happen, but the city wise, no, I don't miss any of it at all. I don't miss being called mayor. Man, if an old person stops you and they call you mayor, it's going to be my streets paved, trash. I mean, it's always something all the time. So I do not miss that at all. Being a judge wasn't bad. There were some things that weren't fun, but I love the confrontational person that would come in and want to cuss at me and stuff. I just love that.
Just be like, game on. I feel like you would love that.
Oh, I absolutely just I crave that. I mean, if you come in and you were pissed off about everything, you're cussing me out and stuff inside, I'm like, this is a fun day, you know? And I was very fair to people and I treated you the same. If you called me an MF or you said, hey, Mr. Stanford, how are you doing, Your Honor? I treated you the same, but the people that were mad were the best ones because they get so worked up over shit. I mean, it just, I would enjoy that.
Yeah. A little bit of action, a little bit of spice to your day on those feisty ones.
Yeah. And the different things that I would hear about and people tell me stories, I would just shock me. We had a family in town that this had nothing to do with anything legal at all, but I had dealt with their family two or three different times over different subjects. So one day they come in as a family and there's like 15 of them and they come in my office. And my court clerk secretary, she come in, she goes, this family, and I'm not going to say their name, needs to see you. So I get on the computer. I'm like, they didn't get a ticket or nothing. I'm trying to figure out what's going on. So they come in. I go, can I help y'all? Well, we've got a family issue that we need to settle and we're split on it. And you've always been real fair to us. And so we would like your opinion and for you to give us an avenue to take on this. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what's going on here? And they're like, well, there's seven of us that are for this and there's seven of us against this. So we want you to break the tie to figure out what we're going to do. I'm like, okay. They go, well, seven of us really want to get the Christmas tree frosted and seven of us don't. Could you tell us what to do? I was like, well, personally, Michelle never lets us frost the tree at our house. I always have wanted to do that. So I would go, they frosted their freaking Christmas tree.
Because the judge said so.
You know, the court ruling at that point.
They had two other different little incidents in their family that they would come to me about. The whole family would come in. And I'd settle their family differences. But frosting a Christmas tree was one of my big things that I did as a judge. And someone I'm proud of.
It's hilarious. Yeah, my dad was a mayor for 2 years. And he's been the interim mayor when our other mayor was gone. And just like the small town bullshit that happens, dude. Like they have this guy that'll try to sue him for like everything, and he was like the biggest pain in his ass. So I've always wanted to hear a couple stories from Jeff, because I heard you were a mayor and a small town judge. I'm like, that's got to be good, dude, because I kind of see the behind the scenes of it.
We had a police officer run over a guy one time. I had
break his leg. Was he a basketball player?
No, he popped him in the knee though, and the guy had to have knee surgery. I mean, we had a lot of things, but you know, a lot of it, I don't put up with a lot of crap, and I didn't when I was mayor either. There's a right and wrong for everything. And I may disagree with it, but it's the right thing to do. So we would do the right thing. And that, you know, I wouldn't make a good congressman because I'm not a party line type guy. I'm going to do what I think is best, regardless of what the party says. And we did that as a mayor, and I didn't really have a lot of issues. I mean, we had some things come on. We had, you know, they'd go and call the news stations on us a couple of times because a police officer did this, or we had a water, just all kinds of little things, but you treat people fair and be nice to them, and it's not that bad. And I would ever not take time to talk to someone if they had a problem. If you have a problem, we can talk about it. We may not spend 2 hours on it, but we will discuss it and we'll be fair about things, because when you're a mayor or like Andy's on school board, when you're in that position, you're supposed to do what's best for the school, your community, not best for you. And a lot of people forget about that. And so it really wasn't that bad. I didn't have a lot of issues, but I also didn't put up with a lot of issues. If the city done something wrong, I was on the people's side. Same as when I was a judge. The cop's not right all the time. I had some different issues that I had a cop give an old man, 80-some-year-old man, a ticket one time for not dimming his lights at nighttime. That bitch can't see. You know what?
You're like, man, hell no.
I go, why would you write that? I'm going to dismiss that all time. You know, there's no reason to give an 80-something-year-old man a ticket because he didn't dim his freaking lights. Pick your battles. That's true. A bad battle to have.
That is very true. Man, it's been cool to see your guys' success on the Big Honker podcast, because I remember way back in the day listening to it. And then, like I said, being on your guys' podcast, now having you guys on here. And then with the Stanfield hunting and everything, it's just been awesome to see, you know. And then I get to see you guys at trade shows too, a handful of times a year. So it's not it's good seeing you guys there. I got one last question. Is there somebody that you have just been like trying to get on, but you just haven't been able to, like a dream guest or just an unreachable person that if you got them, you'd be like, yes, finally.
Sammy Hagar.
So yes, but I'm always trying to get the big guests. I got a couple white whales out there, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys that I would love to have on here. Jordan Peterson would be one of them. He's pretty much ungettable. I'm trying to think. He's probably my white whale. And I know that'll probably never happen. We've got an opportunity to get a pretty big guest here. I'm not going to say who, but it sounds like it might be a done deal.
The one I told you about the other day?
Yeah.
I think it's a done deal.
He'll be big if we get that on. It's looking like we are. But yeah, I mean, I'm always trying to get like the biggest names on here. So yeah, there's definitely a bunch of guys that are just ungettable right now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just, you know, it's
unreachable.
It's a marathon, right? Like, just continue to grow and you never know what the future is going to hold.
Oh yeah, it'll happen eventually. You just got to keep going pretty much.
I want to be, Sammy Hagar is one person I'd like to have on. I've reached out to them a couple of times and emailed back and forth with his secretary. I can't get that done. I would like that. It has nothing to do with hunting. Just, I like Van Halen and I think he's a cool story. Keel O'Neill is someone I'd like to have on. He's a good dude, a really good dude. And it's one of them things. If you know the right person that knows somebody, you can get them on, because every time we've ever had anybody that's like, I just don't know. And then if they listen to our podcast, they're like, man, we can talk about what we want to be ourselves. These guys don't judge. So you know, Shaq, Sammy Hagar are two people that I think would be really cool to have on. And
Brett Favre would be cool. I'd like to talk to him. They got a whole thing on Netflix coming out about him. It's not looking very good. I don't think it's going to be a pro Brett Favre thing. So I bet he's going to lay low for a while. Favre would be good. Yeah. Jordan Peterson would be interesting. I'd be way above my weight class with Peterson. I feel like Favre I could talk to. He feels like a normal guy.
I'll tell you what I would like to see, not for me at all, because I don't have any interest in this at all. One day I want to look at Joe Rogan and see Andy on Joe Rogan's show. Yeah. I think, because Andy's an interesting person, and I think Joe Rogan and Andy could have really good conversations because they're pretty.
I think so too.
And I could see Andy and Joe, and I think one day Andy will be on Joe Rogan. I think that will happen one day, because we've had a lot of our guests. I bet we're getting close to 20 of our guests have been Joe Rogan's guests also.
Got to keep.
Damn. See, there it is. That's all it takes, is one connection like that to bridge you to somebody else, you know, just like networking like that.
Yeah. It's a small world. I mean, the waterfowl world's really, really small. But then like we talked about earlier, just like that network thing and just working that network, you just realize like, you're not as far separated from a lot of people as you might think that you are. Like, the ordinary person probably doesn't know, like, you're only two or three connections away from really, really big.
Very true.
I don't know. Trump might be cool, but he spearheads the conversation. Like, you'll ask about golf and he'll talk to you about Diet Coke or something. So I don't know. That might go off the rails.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're always striving for that. Big name guest and
big name people.
Hopefully this guy I was talking about, soon we can announce it, but it'll be big.
Yeah. Well, keep the lookout, guys. It was good having you on. Good catching up. I'm sure I will catch you at a trade show. And I see sometimes you get hung up. Where was it? It was like Game Fair or something you guys didn't make it to this year or something like that.
Game Fair was 3 years ago. We got stuck coming back home. Yeah. This year it was Turkey. We got stuck. We're getting on a plane. We fly again Tuesday, so we'll see what happens there. I'm sure.
Hell yeah.
We'll go to shit that day. But we appreciate you having us on, Matt, and we will see you at Squad Fest. Are you going to be at Delta or Ducks this year?
I got the choice. I'm going to go to Ducks this year instead of Delta. So I'll be at Squad Fest, and then I'll be at Ducks, and then after that I'll be at Game Fair. So kind of there's like five trade shows back to back to back to back after Squad Fest, and I really don't really want to go to all of them in a row, having a newborn too.
A busy little stretch right there in July and August.
Yeah, dude, it gets hectic, and then after that it's like go time to start filming. So I pick and choose. I've never been to Memphis, and I think that's where the Ducks one is this year. So
yep,
I've been to Oklahoma City once. So I was like, I'll go to somewhere I've never been yet.
We'll be at, me and Andy will be at all. We'll be at St. Louis, Oklahoma City, and Memphis. Appreciate you having us on. God bless you. Congratulations on that new baby.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on, guys. And we'll catch you guys on the next one.
Yes, all right, sir.
Thank you, sir.